The scripture from today, for today is from Revelation 21, verse 5. And the one who was seated on the throne said, "See, I am making all things new." Also he said, "Write this, for these words are trustworthy and true."
Yeah, I'm guilty of doing what I don't like for preachers or anyone to do who considers themselves a theologian. That's called proof texting. You know what that means? You know, you take one little snippet of a text and you use it to whatever end you have in mind. And I sort of did that with this Revelation and passage. First of all, there is no... How many people think there's a book of Revelations in the Bible? Oh, you would be so wrong. Yeah, and most people call it Revelations. Have you read from Revelation? Well, it's not. It's Revelation, and it's I know. Don't you? And it's the revelation to John. Tradition has it that the Apostle John was on the Isle of Patmos at a very old age and wrote this. It is a witness to actually four times he was taken up to heaven in the spirit and talks about all of the scary stuff that winds up being part of that book. We talk about the words apocalypse. You know what the word apocalypse means? You know, when we hear that in current jargon, we think of a terrible, terrible war. We think of zombies or we think of something like that, don't we? And apocalypse really is a relatively innocent word. It is the Greek word, apocalypticos, for revelation. And it literally means the revealing. And so what the book of the Revelation to John is... It's an apocalyptic book that deals with eschatology. Oh, Sarah, you continually irritate me with that. Bill almost had it out of his mouth. But you're right. Eschatology is the study of the end of time. End times. Okay. This morning's passage is a passage. I'm going to read the rest of the beginning of that chapter to you because it really is a beautiful, beautiful picture. John is speaking here and he says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice from the throne saying, 'Behold, the dwelling of God is with all people. He will dwell with them and they shall be his people and God himself will be with them. He will wipe every tear from their eye, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away.'" Sounds like heaven on earth, does it not, really? And this passage was written after the absolute destruction of Jerusalem. So all that the children of Israel had hoped for in their vision of how the future would be had been wiped away from them. And remember that these earliest Christians were also Jews. By the time this had written, the Greek part of the church had grown, but it was still hopeful. Still hopeful. In New Year, the concept of new is something that I want us to deal with a little bit today. Feel free to break in any time you're so moved. No, I mean that. I never ask rhetorical questions, and I'm always open to interruption because it's one of my bad habits to interrupt others, so it only seems fair. What does the phrase, "she wakes up to a whole new world every day," mean to you?
Megan.
Honey, I'm not going to say Mary Louise. It's usually when that phrase is used, she wakes up to a whole new world every day. Is that a complimentary phrase? It's generally not complimentary. The truth is, though, friends, is that we all wake up to a whole new world every day. The world that we're living in this very second it's gone. When I said every second, it was already gone by the time that got out of my mouth. The process of creation did not stop on the sixth day as recorded in Genesis. Creation is the ongoing job of God. That means that newness is built into the creative act. The fact that there is creation, there are billions of stars being born at this very moment somewhere, and there are other billions of stars dying at this moment somewhere. Newness is built into it. Richard. Mm-hmm. And that was that missed it by probably a factor of a jillion. Yeah. But you're right. Yeah, the ancients looked up to the stars, and all they could see to compare them with was the grains of sand, that they were that numerous. Newness is built into creation just like gravity is. Because this passage this morning, "Behold, I make all things new," does not mean just a particular event in a particular time, doesn't it? A new creation happens every nanosecond. I don't even know what a nanosecond is, but it's every nanosecond of every day. Creation is new. Think about that. And then at New Year's, we come together and we think about the new, don't we? But New Year's is arbitrary, is it not? This is a Julian calendar that sort of works and sort of doesn't. We have to give and take a day here every 4 years or so just to make the thing add up. So it's certainly not, it is not any absolute, is it? New Year's is arbitrary. It's just a mark on the wall. Nonetheless, we're here again, and we will wish each other a happy New Year's. And thinking of the new is both exciting and scary, is it not? It really is. The new will happen regardless. There is a certain within us that we want things the way they were in the good old days. How many have ever said that? Oh, I wish it could be like it was back. I have. Yeah, I have. It's not going to happen, is it? Can't go back. Can't go back. So it will happen. We will greet the new creation every instant of our existence. What makes us so unique in the scheme of creation is that we have a choice as to how we will respond to the new. We are not governed just by a clock or a calendar. We are not governed just by built-in instincts. We have choices to make. And the old adage is true. If you keep on doing what you've been doing, what are you going to do? You're going to keep on getting what you've been getting. Yeah. Yeah. God desires our movement, I believe, toward wholeness. What does that mean to you when I say God desires our movement toward wholeness? Wholeness. What is that? Does anybody have a notion what I mean there? Because I'm kind of wondering myself what I meant when I said that. A movement toward wholeness. Claudia, how do you understand that? Okay. So giving, so the giving itself is a part of being whole. Oh, okay. Wholeness and potential. Be the very best that you can be given the gifts you've been given. Yeah, I can see that. Anybody else? Wholeness. Okay, to be completed. And Donna, that's kind of a paradox, isn't it? Because we know we can't be fully completed in body, mind, and spirit. But the goal, the desire is to move in that direction. And what happens when we realize we're not there? That we've got two choices then, don't we? We can get frustrated and give up, or keep on keeping on. Yeah. Hopefully moving in that way of completion. Who is our model for embracing the new? Where's Isaac when you need him? Yeah. Jesus is the model for embrace. He broke down every door. He went against almost every social and political rule of the day. That when he talked to the woman at the well, it was lunchtime and she was drawing water because no one else would go with her to the well. She was an outcast. He would go through the fields picking the grain, knowing that it was against the law. He came up and brought newness into every situation that he touched. And then, you know what it seems like sometimes we have the audacity to do? We try to take Jesus and make him into a fixed, generally Renaissance painting looking sort of guy. And we try to fix him in that. When Jesus broke every mold there was. If Jesus were to walk in here today, I have a feeling we would be astounded and miss him. One of the great evangelists of the 50s was evangelizing in India, and he said that this guy was running by and he wanted to get to him so he could get up and see there was a huge statue of Jesus upon the stage, and he was running towards it, and the guy and the evangelist stopped him and he said, "Where are you running from?" He says, I want to get up there where I can see Jesus. And the evangelist said, "But you're missing him in the face of everyone that you pass by." So when we try to fix our notion of who this Jesus is and make him into somehow the absolute model, where it be the perfect baby Jesus or the Sacred Heart infant Jesus or any of the pictures of the Renaissance that show a Jesus who is so blonde and so neat and clean, We've missed it, haven't we? We really have. So when you think of, when I think of Jesus, I think of a rowdy guy. I think of a guy that always caused a stir wherever he went. And people would leave saying, did you hear what he said? Jesus is our model for embracing the new. And embracing the new unlocks our potential. 65 wasn't so bad. 70, I started thinking, I'm getting old. I've done most of what I'm going to do. And then I read Grandma Moses started painting later than I am. Oh, man. How do we go about unlocking the new in our own lives? And this is not a trick question. How do we do that? Yeah. Don't turn down new opportunities by rote. Don't just not do something because it's new and scary. That's one thing. Judy.
I always wondered about the first person who ever did something that the rest of us have done. And it's what you're talking about. They put things together.
With a different way of looking at things.
I have great desires to find out who was the first caveman to paint a horse in the
In that cave in France, maybe somewhere, yeah. And that is to be, and I think about, there is a show on now about the 90s, and it talks about, you know, kind of the beginning, and Katie Couric, or one of the, says, what is the internet anyway? And it was this, you know, it was this weird sounding thing, and I remember thinking, that is not going to last. You know? So yeah, be open to it. What is the church's job in this? In investigating the new. What is the church's job?
Be present.
Be present? Okay. Whoa. Wow. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, and I'm getting a little bit staid, and that bothers me. Yeah. Did y'all hear Peggy said don't not do something just because you've never done it that way or you've always done things differently. And we do that here, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Claudia. I needed that. I needed to hear that. Yeah. Yeah, when you think of the people who have started careers and done these amazing things, a lot older than our next door neighbor, Bill, and y'all have got, you know, some of you have the little Jesus plaques that he's making. I need to get him to give me some more. And he'll be 102 in September. And he's out every day, all day in his workshop, just working away out there. And it is absolutely amazing. I think what the church is called to be, and this is the word I used, I think the church is called to be the catalyst. And the church most often has been exactly the opposite, has it not? Has she not? Rather than being the catalyst of the new, the church's history is more the guardian of the old. How are we going to do that? I mean, I saw you go like that when I said the catalyst of the new. How are we going to do that here? When someone comes up with a new wacky idea, don't put it down just because it's new and wacky. Yeah. Everyone here today, your homework is to come up with an idea of something absolutely new for us to try. Absolutely new for us to try. A what?
All the brains are smoking.
There they are. And the deadline, we got to get it done before Jesus gets back.
Okay.
Judy.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing we can all do is open our minds to something we haven't done before, but to take on a responsibility
or a job. Oh, that call for volunteerism was put in there pretty sneakily. Well done. Yeah. Take a new job this year in the church. But think, I'm serious. Someone out there has a kernel of an idea, and you may have even thought, that's a little too much. That's a little wacky. I don't think even this bunch will buy that. But I know it's out there. Think of it. Kind of let it grow in your mind a little bit. Something that is just entirely new for us. Church's job is to be the catalyst of the new. But it's kind of a bifocal job in that the church's job is to be the catalyst of the new while at the same time honoring the tradition of the ancients. We walk in the footsteps of a cloud of saints. And to honor them, we want to be a catalyst for the new at the same time honoring the saints who have gone before us. Can you do both at the same time? I think you can. I think you have to. If the church is, that's a red wasp, isn't it? Yeah. Who was the animal saint that it was it
Francis.
Saint Francis. I read a legend of Saint Francis one time. He was out in the woods and he got bit by a mosquito. Has anybody else read this legend? And he swatted the mosquito by a reflex. And he was so filled with guilt that he went into the swamp and out where mosquitoes were and sat there. And they said when he came back, no one recognized him. He was completely covered in insect bites. I'm still not going to sit around for a red wasp to bite, you know. I think I've got a good ending here. No. Oh, that isn't good. Okay. Catalyst for the new, honoring the traditions that have brought us this far. I believe, and this is the truth. I wrote it down, but I still believe it's the truth. 2019 can be an exciting and a fulfilling time for us at FCCC, or as I like to say, FC3. That has a now sound to it. Will it be a little bit scary at times? One of y'all is going to bring forth an idea and we're going to, I wish you hadn't thought of that. But if it's something that promotes God's love and our acceptance of that love, then it's okay. But I think we can have a lot of fun this year if we will just allow ourselves to be opened up to the new. Oh, and by the way, it will probably have to move us out of our comfort zones just a bit. Amen.